Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
It's August 31st, 2010. Officially, it's still summer, but last night we had a fire going in the fireplace, and not for the first time in recent weeks. This morning, I could resist no longer and switched on the central heating. It had simply become too chilly in the house to do without it, although the neighbors are apparently still trying. Good for them. The oil man is coming this afternoon, and the cost of heating oil notwithstanding, it's good to know we will have a full tank for the autumn and long cold winter ahead of us. I've gone through more than 40 summers in this part of Switzerland, and the summer of 2010 has to go down as one of the worst in memory. In fact, it was a non-summer. This year, the winter just went on and on and on. In fact, we were still heating the house well into June. There was a brief spell of hot, summery weather in July, and for a couple of days in August. But that was it. The forecasters say that better weather might return for a while, but there's no telling for how long. Where I grew up back in the New York area, our summers were tropical and were measured in months, not days. You could plan a garden party weeks in advance and be relatively sure that the event could be held. But here in the fickle climate north of the Swiss Alps, every day is a meteorological roulette game. You can start out with a chilly rain in the morning and be wearing short sleeves in the afternoon, and vice versa. For example, last Thursday I was riding my motor scooter wearing shorts and a t-shirt with a hot sun beating down. Yesterday, I was on the scooter wearing a winter jacket and gloves. Early this morning, I was in the woods with my daughter's dog. It was cloudy and threatening. Now, it has cleared, and I see nothing but blue sky, albeit with a chilly easterly breeze blowing. But that could change again this afternoon. On Sunday, we were able to have a family get-together in the nearby woods at short notice. It was our 40th wedding anniversary, and my daughter's 38th birthday. It must have been an act of divine mercy that it didn't rain, because the next day it did. This climatic fact of northern Swiss life has left people philosophical, at least on the surface. They're resigned to it, and have learned to enjoy every single warm, sunny day. But medically, I think the long periods of dreary weather have a negative impact on the northern Swiss psyche. Based on discussions I've had with doctors and psychologists over the years, it seems that depression is the Swiss national disease, and it's a fact that tranquilizers and antidepressants are the most prescribed drugs in this country. Other factors may also be at play, but I believe the weather plays no small part. But there's a brighter side to all of this, the autumn. In my opinion, what northern Switzerland loses in summer, it makes up for in the fall. There are many clear, bright days. Temperatures can be mild and pleasant, and the mountains are especially beautiful at this time of the year. It's also the classic season for walking and hiking, not to mention seasonal culinary favorites like raclette, fondue, rice, and mushroom dishes. Fall is usually a great time to be here. And if the weather doesn't cooperate, well, there's always the warmer and drier spots to go to in Ticino or Valle, south of the Alps, where you can turn back the meteorological clock at least a few weeks.
Ascona, Ascona, che sul bel lago maggior, in canti, coi canti, al profumo dei tuoi fior. Ascona, delle bimbe sogno d'or, sei bella la perla, il sorriso dell'amor.
100 years ago, Ascona was a quiet fishing and farming village. Today, 90% of its income is from tourism. Then, there was one hotel. Today, it's a tourist mecca offering 50 hotels, 900 vacation apartments, 140 tourist rooms, 3 camping and caravan parks, and 4 youth hostels. Ascona has become an attraction in itself. There's even a German-made car called Ascona. And that helps make the point that Ascona is incredibly popular with the Germans and German Swiss, thousands of whom have actually settled in this area. Why are so many people drawn to this tiny village on Lago Maggiore? Let's go to Brigitte Bizzari of the Ascona Tourist Office.
They come of the nice weather. It's a very attractive place. It's very picturesque. They have all sports.
There's even a golf course here, I think.
Yes, it's one of the biggest in Switzerland. It's very quiet, and it's at the lake. No, it's a very nice place.
I just wonder what golfers do if their ball goes into the lake. Do they have to go into the lake to play it?
No, they don't have so far.
Can you say which sport or which pastime tends to be the most popular among the average visitor?
All the waters, sailing, windsurf, water ski. To swimming.
There's another sport, we could call it that, in Ascona, and it's a very inactive sport. You just sit down at one of the cafes down by the lake and watch people and let them see you. This is almost a tradition in Ascona, isn't it, that people come to see and be seen?
Yes, that's true. I do very often also. It makes me quiet. I can forget problems of the day. I can think something else.
Is there much for people interested in the arts, for example?
Yes, we have every year the Ascona Music Festival. And we have New Orleans Festival every year. Traditional jazz by the lake. And we have the Festival of the Marionettes.
And what do you do in winter? What can people do in winter in Ascona?
It's very quiet. They can meditate. We have very, very much sunshine. They can take quiet walks. We have very much writers. They have here the apartment. They don't come here in summer because there are too much people here. But in winter, they stay here 1 or 2 months to write and
find their inspiration.
Yes, that's it.
Sounds from the Ascona New Orleans Jazz Festival, a yearly event and a major attraction featuring some of the biggest names in traditional jazz. And here is where it happens. It's what I call the front line, the Piazza Motta, the busy main road by the lakeside and the focal point of life in Ascona, where it's hard to escape the eyes of all the sidewalk cafe and restaurant patrons. And who wants to escape? To see and be seen is the main idea at the Piazza Motta, where high fashion and casual peacefully intermingle. Horst Gedecke has seen a lot of these people come and go and come back again. Born in Germany and now a well-integrated, naturalized Swiss, Mr. Gedecke owns one of those popular frontline cafe restaurants.
My father said many years ago, you must go in Switzerland for work in the hotel. And I go for 1 year, okay, that's right. And now I'm here 30 years.
And you decided to stay in Ascona. What is the attraction for you personally? Why did you come here and say, this is the place for me?
The life, the people, and the sunshine.
In which order? First the sunshine and then the people?
Not the people.
How would you describe the clientele, the visitors that you have to your establishment here? What kind of people are they?
It's German people and Swiss German people. The language is German, and another time Italian people from Italy, because the way is not too long from Milano. I think 80% is German language.
Is it possible to live in Ascona and speak only German?
Yes, you can.
There's no doubt that Ascona's physical beauty and the gentle nature of its people and lifestyle are its major assets. And these were the factors that past generations also found so attractive. This was especially true of many Germans and German Swiss who began to discover the area in the early 1800s in large numbers. Although the German-Swiss presence in Ticino goes back centuries, Ascona specifically started to become part of the folklore of Germanic travelers in general, who quite literally considered Ascona a paradise on earth, a refuge of peace and tranquility. The word began to spread, attracting many artists, writers, and thinkers who sought an alternative style of living. The last great movement of this kind involving Ascona, and the one that really put it on the map, began early this century when a hill above the village was given the name Monte Verità, the Mountain of Truth, by some of the best-known international social and cultural figures of the day. That's where I'm speaking from now. Within the vast gardens atop the hill, these people tried to give life to a utopian society based here, a forerunner of experiments in communal living. There's a museum here that documents this glorious chapter in Ascona's rise to international fame. Its resident historian is a German-Swiss, Dr. Harald Seemann.
This history of the invasion from the north, people looking in the south for the big ideal of, ideal communist society under the sign of the Big Mother. This is starting, you can even date it, when Bakunin, the anarchist, comes to Locarno. And we know that he was also in Ascona, but at this moment the hill was still without nothing. And then in 1900 you have this kind of life reform movement, which is looking for a third way between, roughly said, communism and capitalism. And also a movement which goes away from the big industrial centers, which wanted to, through nature, reform life. And they gave to this hill the name of Mountain of Truth. And this had to do with Tolstoy, who at this moment was called the Man of Truth, and so on. And then you have to imagine, if you read the early books of Hermann Hesse, that sometimes you had 1,000 people here on the hill and all looking for another way of life. It was like in the 60s, the hippie movement, where you had thousands on the roads looking for something else.
These were hippies of their age, weren't they?
Oh, hippies. I mean, they were real idealists, and they wanted to make a cooperative social system without private property. They didn't marry, they made a conscious marriage, and then you had nudism, you had the reform of that had to do again with theosophy and reincarnation. The better you live, the better you eat, the better is your reincarnation. So they were against meat and so on. And after 2 years of activities on the hill, they attracted a big number of people. And so you have the second generation of anarchists. You had all the psychanalysts, which were no more agreeing with Freud, because they found that you have to heal the soul of humanity, and not making again a science out of psychanalysis. Then you had also the artists coming here, and also started here the big movement of free dance. Laban was here, Mary Wigman, Duncan was here, and so on. And so it was until 20, this kind of spirit being on the hill, but in the village started already, Ascona became a village of the artists. And at the same moment, Ascona was so known that bankers and industrials started to buy here the land. And then the mess starts. Huh? It's always the same.
I'm just outside Ascona, within sight of the customs houses on the Swiss-Italian frontier. One of the prominent members of Ascona's resident artistic community, which reads like a roll call of well-known names in the German-language show business world, incidentally, is Karl Schell, of the famous Swiss acting family that includes Maria and Maximilian. Perched on the side of a mountain here, overlooking Lago Maggiore and me, Carl Schell's home could be described as a paradise within a paradise, featuring a jungle-like garden of palms and exotic plants. Carl Schell's hobby. Why was Ascona his choice?
When I was a young fellow, by some coincidence, I came to Ascona once. I was about 17, 18 years old, and I was very fascinated by the place, by the people. I met the people of Ascona at the time, most Erich Maria Remarque, Otto Bachmann, the big painter, and Erich Maria Remarque, the writer, which No News in the West, and so on. This whole atmosphere gave something to me which, as a young boy, I found here some kind of freedom which I haven't seen before any place in the world. I missed this southern atmosphere. German-speaking people or German-feeling people always have the desire to belong to the south. This is for somebody else to explain why, but we know it's there, and they go in masses wherever they can, to Italy and to Spain and so on. And there are many strangers who make mistakes here. I mean, if they live here, they should at least say buongiorno, arrivederci, or scusi, non posso parlare italiano, or some things like that before they go. But they come in and they talk their language and so on. And I think it would be much easier if people adapt. For example, my children, they go to Italy. Italian-speaking school, they speak Italian in the kindergarten, they speak better Italian than I do, and I think this is all right, so they have to adapt here. I think people who live here should at least as far adapt that they try to adapt to the style of living here and not bring their own thing. This might be one day a problem.
Al Schalk is an American journalist who has spent a number of years living in Canton Ticino and writing about it, and is something of a Ticinese social critic. Let's look at this Germanic factor, if we could coin that expression here in Ascona. Do you think the local people really are in such harmony with these foreigners, at least linguistic foreigners, as we've heard in this program?
I would say that on the whole, the relationship is still rather good, but there are certain areas of tension. And one of them is that the Ticinese feel deeply the intrusion, you might say, a kind of invasion of their culture, because the Germans and German Swiss come in such tremendous numbers that they feel like strangers in their own canton. And a great many Germans and German Swiss contribute to this tension in that they do not attempt even to say buongiorno or to use a minimum of Italian expressions.
As far as the locals are concerned, do they make a differentiation between the Germans of Germany who come and settle here and the German Swiss?
Yes, they do. And it's certainly ironic because you would think that they would resent foreigners and rather accept the German Swiss, who are after all Swiss. But the very fact that the German Swiss are Swiss gives some of them the impression that they can come here and act as if they own the place. Many German Swiss take advantage of the fact that they are Swiss and can easily buy up property, and so that some of them, unfortunately, go too far, buy up a lot of property, drive up the prices for rents and for property values, and speculate even to a large extent, so that the Ticinese themselves are forced very often to move far out from their own original place of origin, far away in the remoter areas of their towns, because they can no longer afford to live there.
Al Schalk, the American journalist resident for many years in the canton of Ticino and a writer on the subject, thank you very much for joining us and adding your opinions to what we've heard on Ascona. Welcome to Switzerland and Sound to James Martin. He's on the other side of the Atlantic on the telephone in San Francisco, California, in the United States. James is the chief writer of Go Europe. Go Europe. .about.com. Now, James, you are one of America's leading online travel journalists, and you've written extensively about Switzerland. You're a great European traveler. That's the reason why you have this website called Go Europe. Tell us a little bit about it. I mean, what is your particular personal passion in Europe as a traveler?
Well, I've been traveling since about 1976, I think. And I started out as an electrical engineer and didn't really like it. So I became an archaeologist, and I did work in Italy and Greece, and really just fell in love with the idea of travel and tried to make money off of it. And so I became a travel writer 5 years ago.
Tourism is a lot of fun, and to make money at it is even better. How did you get on to Switzerland originally?
My first trip was 7 weeks around all of Europe, and I spent part of that in Switzerland, as just about everyone did.
It was part of the Grand Tour. It was a must-see. Certainly we're talking back into the 60s and probably even in the 70s, I would say, right?
Yeah, that's true. That was the time when if I went to my neighbors and I didn't know them and I asked them for a fondue pot, there was a 90% chance they'd have it. And you had to go to Switzerland to get a watch. You know,
right.
That was Switzerland's big time, I think, in the 60s and 70s.
Where would you say Switzerland stands today in North America as a destination in terms of popularity, in terms of attractiveness?
I would put it fifth or sixth of the countries in Western Europe in popularity right now.
That's surprising because over here there's a lot of concern about what's being called high-priced island Switzerland, pricing itself out of the market. It's out of the price range of many people. That seems to be the perception, but your own feelings and your own statistics would seem to disagree with that, contradict that.
Yeah, I was there not so long ago, and it didn't seem like hotels of the type I would stay in. And as I get older, I require more things in my hotel room than I did when I was 18. But I would say that a typical three-star hotel or what we would call a three-star hotel in Italy, it wasn't that much more expensive to stay in Switzerland. And the food wasn't outrageous in cost. So I don't think it's all about the total cost of things in Switzerland. I think that what has happened with the information explosion of today, that people are trying to get this total value out of their travel. And Switzerland really hasn't done enough to say, we've got a great cuisine, we've got some great wine, we've got all of these things. When you go to a site about Italy, you see, I can plan a trip from morning to night and have medieval villages, great cuisine that I can talk to my neighbors about and they'll understand, and great wine. And I can plan every moment of the whole day and have something interesting to do that people at home will understand. And I think really that there's great food in Switzerland, but we don't think of that cuisine as cuisine anymore in the United States.
You're suggesting very discreetly and diplomatically that the Swiss, as a tourism destination, have become somewhat complacent over the years. Here we are, it's a seller's market, but of course that doesn't exist anymore. The intimation is they're not doing enough, they're not aggressive enough from the marketing point of view.
That's true. Let me give you an example. Before the Olympics, I had the opportunity to visit Turin as part of a press trip, and it was, you know, they showed us everything. But when I got back to the States before the Olympics, the Travel Channel was just loaded with all of these programs that all of these journalists had gone through about northern Italy, about Piemonte, and about Turin. And suddenly, everyone online was talking about, hey, I'm giving up Rome and going to Torino.
Yeah.
And, you know, that had an enormous effect. because this is the information age, you know, and people see these things and they have to go. One of the change, the other change between the 70s and today is you had more young people traveling in the 70s. They were out after, let's go see the Matterhorn, let's go hike in the mountains, let's go skiing in the winter. Today you have more older people traveling. They're not going to strap on a backpack and go away for 5 days.
You're calling for a more aggressive, a more flexible, and more appealing package to actually attract people here. More could be done in that respect.
More could be done. And I think sometimes it's just cyclical, these markets, you know, because you got me thinking about my first trip there and how different our attitudes about travel were and all of the things we knew about Swiss food then, and now you'd be hard-pressed to find a Swiss restaurant in the United States. I know there's one long-standing one in San Francisco, but we don't find Swiss wines on menus anymore. Maybe they've priced themselves out of that market as well. But there are all these good things. We just have forgotten about them in the United States and needed to be reminded somehow.
And James, what are your own personal favorite spots in Switzerland?
I think my favorite spot was Basel. And just because I think it sits at that crossroads. And I remember the first time, you know, between France, Germany, and Switzerland, the first time I went there, I remember going into one of the Guildhall restaurants, and I was just overwhelmed, you know, at the beauty of these buildings inside. And you know, carved beams, and they had great food. And at that time, I was limiting two of us to $50 a day, and we could do it. You know, we didn't eat lunch. We just ate the big dinner at the Guildhall restaurant and had an extraordinary meal.
Yeah.
And I just liked that place a lot.
It's the headquarters of the Basel or the Swiss chemical and pharmaceutical industry. Very cosmopolitan, very international, very savvy, very refined, and a great cultural spot. But what about, for example, in contrast, some of the wide open spaces, for example, Graubünden or the Grissens in southeastern Switzerland, where nature is virtually untouched? Does that appeal to you too?
It does, yeah. I think that's a big selling point for Switzerland, and I'll probably be writing more about that aspect of taking the train, how to get around Switzerland to see that natural beauty.
Well, we have a lot of it. We're trying very hard to offer ideas here on Switzerland and Sound. You were kind enough also to provide a link to Switzerland and Sound on your website. We'll be doing the same for you. And we appreciate this very much. James Martin is the chief writer for goeurope.about.com. You'll see the link on the text version of this item here on Switzerland in Sound. James, thank you very much indeed. And let's keep in touch. One man's independent and very honest and candid opinion of Switzerland as a destination. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me.
James Martin on Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.